Here at Renew Energy Partners, climate change is very important to us, and so is beer. In every episode of the Green Beers podcast, we taste a beer together. We talk about the brewery and their sustainability practices. And then we talk about a topic relating to our work in decarbonizing buildings and mitigating climate change.
All right. Welcome to Green Beers. My name is Mike Savage, and I'm here with
Charlie Lord and our first guest of season three, Martin Chilcott.
Glad to be here. Thank you, gentlemen.
Welcome, Martin.
Welcome. Yeah, no, this season three is going to be different than the preceding, where we're going to have some great guests. And Martin, we're very excited to have you as one of our partners and as the CEO and founder of Manufacture 2030, where we're just really thrilled that you came to join us and to kick off this season. So first real order of business, we gotta start with our beer. And
we're tasting today with Martin as our first outside judge, American Pale Ale from the Bronx Brewery.
Oh, that's great. Are we going to share one between the three of us?
Well, we always provide a little context. It is the middle of the afternoon before we have a major event, so we're going to be honest. Now, we could all have one. If you feel right, 7:30 in London.
7:30 in London. I'm feeling it's beer o'clock.
Let's do it. Let's break out another one.
All right. We will, and it's also we'll see how crushable they are.
There you are. Do we have glasses, Mike?
So we are this. I will say we're in New York City. It's UN Week and the WeWork
and Climate Week.
And Climate Week. So we're at capacity here.
We're tasting this beer out of coffee
mugs.
Cheers.
And welcome to Green Beers, Martin Chilcott.
Cheers. All right. Absolutely. Great pleasure. Who could say no to such a great idea?
All right. So the Bronx Brewery, obviously based in the Bronx. And we'll talk more about them later. But their mission is community creativity and inclusivity, and they make a series of beers with community organizations in the Bronx to highlight different issues. Pretty cool.
Yep.
The Pale Ale is not one of them. That's called the Y Series, but we're tasting their American Pale Ale.
Beautiful American Pale Ale, 6.3%. And with that, Martin, let's. You're not an American. We can start there. Your background, your career, how did you get started, and what was the beginning of your clean tech journey?
Well, I've always been an entrepreneur in technology. So it started off for me really in about 1990 when the internet was first emerging. And we created in London one of London's leading web development companies. Anyway, I sold that to a NASDAQ company, and the NASDAQ company kind of screwed things up, to be honest. And they were bought by a South African London stock exchange listed Cisco reseller. Cisco's biggest reseller it was at the time. And I ended up with golden handcuffs working for them for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, so it was probably about 2003, friends of mine at Oxford University at the Environmental Change Institute, who play a big role in, not getting too technical, but in the modeling for climate change for the IPCC.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. It's called the Environmental Change
Institute. Yeah, it's a real brain trust around climate science. Extraordinary. Yeah. And they in sort of the early noughties said to me, "Come on, Martin, what are you doing? Come on, you've got to do something interesting, haven't you, next? What's the great challenge?" And they said, "Well, look, come on, have you heard about climate change?" And I said, "Well, everybody's heard about it. Isn't it very controversial?
But what can we even do about it?
Yeah, surely it's really controversial." And they said, "Well, look, just come and listen to our guys talking about it. Come to a few of our lectures." And after the first one, they said, "Do you still think it's controversial?" I said, "No, okay, it's not, is it? It's really black and white science about what's happening." And they said, "It's not just that. It's also the biggest economic opportunity that the world has ever faced." Because we've got to change everything.
This was back when?
About 2003.
Right.
Yeah. And so I thought, okay, well, if you think you're an entrepreneur, Martin,
how about this challenge?
Yeah, quite. Exactly. So that's how it started. And we started off, we set up an incubator called Meltwater Ventures, and we tried various businesses that we developed. And we looked at a very small company at the time in the early noughties called LinkedIn. And we thought, that's interesting what they're doing. They're doing it about recruitment. You know, maybe we could do something similar for sustainable business professionals, and it's going to be a growing area and a growing ecosystem. So we started there. But then LinkedIn had hundreds of millions of dollars of funding, and I think we had my money. Which pretty quickly came to
that scalability.
Yeah, there was a different sort of level of it. Fortunately, though, our platform was spotted by somebody at Cisco, who had been talking to Tesco, the big retailer, who were, I think, number two in the world at the time. And their chief executive, a chap called Terry Leahy, made a commitment. I mean, it's one of those kind of incredibly bold, brave, but he really had no idea what he was saying. He said, we're going to reduce the carbon emissions in the products we sell by 30% by 2020.
Amazing.
And then all his team just panicked.
Right, exactly. You know what's interesting, Martin, as we head to our financing roadmaps for net zero event later today, that's still happening.
They're still announcing and panicking. It's not changed. Nothing changes.
These were just the first people.
Yeah, exactly.
To announce.
Absolutely. So, so we realized that the kind of community building capability that we had on this social technology platform could be used to bring suppliers together. So initially it was Tesco's first 1,000. Then Walmart owned a company in Europe called Asda. So we did it with Asda. And then we did some with GSK, GlaxoSmithKline. And then tea industry with led by Unilever and a couple of others. But we were very early, too early. It took forever to win clients. We also had the business model wrong, and we had built this platform to be a sort of LinkedIn for sustainable business. We hadn't really built it to support supply chains. And so we were finding out that the technology never quite worked. So in 2018, I had a really tough, but in the end, great meeting with my shareholders. And I said, you know, gentlemen, we're not going to succeed if we continue like this. But we know what we should be doing. And so we relaunched new technology in Manufacture 2030.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So, and since then, it's just exploded. Partly because, of course, the whole market's exploded. You know, the world has woken up to the challenge. And, you know,
well, first of all, it's a classic entrepreneurial story where you try things until you figure out what actually works.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
yeah.
You did really, the timing is remarkable because, you know, Renew started in 2013. And I like to say we were a 10-year overnight success because it was only right. in 2019 that you had companies setting targets
right.
that they were standing behind.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's when they have to report on an annual basis on their targets that they realize they don't have the capital budgets
yeah.
to meet those targets. And
yeah.
that's where we come together.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this specific sort of mission and methodology of M2030?
Sure. Yeah. So we are the leading software as a service platform, and we have some ancillary services in support of it to help accelerate the decarbonization of manufacturing supply chains.
Yeah.
So it's all upstream scope three. We operate in four sectors. I think we have about 40 global supply chains we're currently supporting, which mm-hmm. is, I don't think anybody's close to those kind of numbers. Automotive is very big, particularly here in the US for us, with GM and Ford and Toyota and Honda. And then a number of their big tier ones, BorgWarner, Denso, Toyota, Boshuku, and a couple of others. So we're cascading down through the auto supply chain, down through the tiers. Pharmaceuticals, so we've got, I think, eight, and we've got a particular collaborative program there where we brought them together to focus on a common area of their supply chain where the hotspot is, where it's difficult to engage the suppliers. It's a program called Activate, so that's great. So that's people like GSK and AstraZeneca and Pfizer and Bristol Myers Squibb and so on. And then retail, grocery retail. So in the UK, all of the national grocery retailers use the platform bar one. We won't mention who they are, but that's yeah. one of them that does it. So we have 11 and all of the kind of tier one food processors and manufacturers as part of that. So that's a great program. It's our oldest program. So the Tesco and Asda Walmart people all came across.
Right.
It was a really
they
big
were sort
test
of
us.
The proving
yeah.
ground for this.
Yeah, if they would come across onto the new platform, yeah. then maybe we had something right. So yeah, it was
amazing.
Absolutely key. Packaged goods, so Unilever and P&G and Perrigo and Reckitt and a few more. And then we have a little bit of other retail around DIY. So a French brand called Castorama, a UK brand called B&Q, and we're talking to a number of others. So it's exciting. It's exploded. It's absolutely exploded.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And for those of of our listeners who are here more for the beer part than the green part. Scope three, meaning the, you know, as leading companies announce their carbon goals, it's not just the carbon emissions from their actual sites that they own or lease. Their footprint really is all the carbon emissions of all of the product, all of the components or subsidiary products that feed into their
product.
That's
right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so there are two. So scope one and two is what you directly emit.
Emit. Right.
Or scope two is almost directly emit.
Right.
Through electricity presents, but it's what you're directly responsible for.
Yeah.
Scope three is goes two ways. It goes upstream and downstream. Mm-hmm. So the upstream bit is what we focus on, which is your supply chain.
Right.
And the emissions in that supply chain that lead to your product.
Yeah.
And then the downstream bit is all to do with your product in use.
Right.
Okay, which we don't have much to say on. I mean, there's an amount of product redesign that can take place in the supply chain, but we don't really have, that's not where we're at. We're about the suppliers.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is so interesting. Your timing really was remarkable because it's emblematic of the fact that as big as the challenge is, it feels like the solutions are finally rising to meet that challenge.
Yeah.
In that it's no longer about putting out an aspirational 10-year goal, issuing a press release and being done with it. Companies are really being asked to measure rigorously throughout their entire ecosystem.
They are, yeah. And not just measure it, but show you're reducing it.
Right.
You know, it's reduction that you have to drive out.
Right.
You've obviously got to be able to measure. You've got to be able to baseline. You've got to be able to then support the reductions. You've got to be able to measure the improvements. But it's really, you know, it's not a kind of static picture that they're being required to show, which is really exciting. I mean, you know, personally, I get more and more optimistic about the possibility of doing this, which sounds mad because we're running out of time.
Right.
You know, we've got to turn this supertanker around, approximately 50% reduction by 2030, and we're down to 2,296 days. Why would I know that? I don't actually mark it off on a board.
Wow.
But almost.
Wow.
You know, it's running. Yeah.
You know, that's the first time I've heard it in days.
And yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, they go fast.
For those of us that are, you know, mission-driven companies in the space, right. I think that's a powerful.
Yeah. It's going. Time is.
Metric.
Yeah. Time is moving very fast. But we're beginning to see a number of forces coming together, which I think can unleash the power, the natural, creative, competitive power of supply chains. I mean, my favorite analogy here is the mobile phone. Mm-hmm. I remember in 1990 working, one of my very first businesses was working with a company in the UK called Carphone Warehouse, became the biggest mobile phone cellular retailer in the UK and Europe. The phones were the size of a brick.
Right.
They were huge. They were really dumb. You know, you punched in numbers and you made a call and that was it.
I remember the first one I saw, it was a friend of my college roommate who's an actor. So, and it's a guy who was a producer in California. You can't make this stuff up.
Right.
It was the size of a small suitcase.
Yeah.
He was so proud of it. He plopped it down in the middle of the table. There was no room for our food. I was like, how's this a good idea?
Exactly. I mean, it's just, they were huge and stupid.
Right.
And I mean, you could move around with them. And the penetration in the market was, you know, a couple of percent.
Right.
You roll forward only about 10 years. Mm. And you've got 60, 70% penetration in Europe. You've got things that are the size of your hand. They're cameras, they're calendars, they're computer. I mean, it's an extraordinary, and the whole revolution that comes with it. And out in places like Africa, you get a whole leapfrogging of technologies. Mm-hmm. Nobody needs fixed wire telephony. It all gets dumped and they go straight mobile. And it just shows you when you line up the creativity and the competitiveness in a supply chain like that, the extraordinary innovation that takes place, people pushing forward. And we can see that is possible to unlock for carbon and for climate change.
And that's
exciting.
And it is, and it's part of what your platform allows.
Yeah.
It, because it's a software as a service, because the suppliers are in the network together, when somebody has a great idea or achieves
a breakthrough,
it's something that gets shared.
That's right. And other people get to see it.
Yeah.
And you can also, we're moving in 23 and then into 24, we're moving to a point where the suppliers will be able to make changes at a facility level to reduce emissions. And they'll be able to, if you like, move that emission savings into their product carbon footprint. So anything that they do to reduce emissions will be then recognized in the product carbon footprint of their products. That, right. Yeah, exactly. And then that becomes really interesting. We have a project that we're just initiating with our clients at the moment, which is to identify what the cost of carbon is if a supplier misses a target. So what's the true cost of ownership? You know, I'm supplier A, and I say to you, have a ton of widgets for $1,000. I'm supplier B, and I say, have a ton of widgets for $1,200. Supplier B is ahead of target by 10% on carbon. Supplier A, selling at $1,000, is, let's say, off by 20%. Mm-hmm. If you understand the difference, that 30% difference, and the cost of that, or the saving on one and the cost on the other, you realize that, you know, that supplier A isn't really $1,000 a ton. It's $1,200 a ton.
Right.
And as soon as you do that, you unlock a competitive advantage for people who can reduce their emissions. And we move the game from being a cost of doing business and from being a compliance issue, and we create it one about competitive opportunity. When we do that, the supply chain will sort this out for us.
Hmm.
And I think, I mean, coming from a supplier partnership event yesterday, I mean, this is all what's going to happen very soon once the supply chain owners start making buying decisions based off of carbon. It's going to move very quickly.
Move very fast. It'll move just like mobile phones.
Yeah.
Right. Huge opportunity.
And as we move up this adoption curve, what do you think is the main challenge?
Well, there are three big challenges in the supply chain at the moment. Well, let me make that four challenges, actually. So one, and then the first one, is at the moment, suppliers don't see it as a priority, because their customers aren't really articulating how it's commercially and financially material and communicating that to the suppliers. They're saying, you know, nice things like, we'd like you to participate in this program. They're not really saying, look, this is business critical to us. It's going to cost us a fortune if we miss these targets. It'll affect our cost of capital. It'll affect our share price. It'll affect our brands if, you know, if you're an EV manufacturer. This is a cannot miss issue. So therefore, this should be a priority for you to our suppliers. That's not quite a strong enough message at the moment. So the first one is, they tend not to be making it a priority yet. That'll change. The second bit is just knowledge. They've never done this before.
Right.
They don't know what to do. So, you know, our platform is there to help them, that help them build their carbon reduction roadmap. The third thing is where you guys come in, which is capital.
Yeah.
You know, probably 70% of what you can do to reduce the emissions in a manufacturing facility affect the operational costs and budgets, and probably cover themselves in the first year. And it's kind of process changes. It's, you know, tweaks here. It's better maintenance. Right. You know,
it's even, but having a building management system so you can see where
see what you're doing.
Right. Yeah.
But that remaining 20-odd% tends to have is the bit that has the biggest impact,
right.
And that requires money. It requires an investment, and for a small or medium-sized manufacturer to be able to find that capital, that's really hard.
And the brilliance of your model, and frankly, in my humble and biased opinion, our partnership, is that we've always seen in the commercial sector that the two roadblocks are capital and complexity. You all sort out the complexity, we find the capital.
Exactly.
And together, we're tackling the two major roadblocks. These are companies that would never dream of having a chief sustainability officer or a sustainability team of their own, but essentially you're filling that gap for them and more.
And then the
capital budget will always be a massive hurdle to doing the bigger projects with the deeper.
Which really matter, yeah. And the capital goes hand in hand with access to the new technologies which are coming on the market.
Right.
And there are lots of new technologies. I mean, they're really difficult to address areas around, you know, high temperature processes required for aluminium or steel or for certain sort of plastics or solvents. But there are so many technologies coming onto the market. I mean, it's extraordinarily exciting. And, you know, setting up new ways of thinking about how you finance pilots, how you roll out, how you back the winners. You know, there's just so much opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's why the fact that it's a learning community is also exciting, because if we have a breakthrough on one project, can lead to a network effect.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, Martin, I think we got to give the people what they want,
which is beer.
Yeah.
Yes. And I've been tasting it while we've been chatting, and I've been thinking, this is good beer.
Yes,
I like that's it. My read as well. This is
I like
our
it.
Partnership is exciting, and thanks again for coming
it,
on.
It means a lot to us, and I think we're just at the beginning of really helping those suppliers, thousands or tens of thousands, really move faster. So thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
No, we're excited about seeing this process evolve and getting these projects over the finish line and seeing those carbon roadmaps update, and it'll be a fun process.
Yeah.
Speed that adoption.
So before we score this beer, Martin, do you have a favorite beer?
I do. I have a very strong favorite beer. Yeah. It's been my favorite beer since I was about 17. So I went to school in a bit of England called Ipswich in East Anglia. And so Britain's got that kind of bulge at the bottom that kind of sticks out into the North Sea. There's a town there in a county of Suffolk called Ipswich. And just up the coast of them in Southwold was a little brewery called Adnams.
Adnams?
Adnams, yeah. And Adnams were tiny back then. And a friend of mine, a chap called Robert Lacey, and I set up the Adnams Appreciation Society. So I think we probably spent far too much time when I was 17 and 18 drinking Adnams. It was just an excuse for it. But Adnams have turned out.
I can see your school teachers, your family appreciating that it was actually a very serious hobby.
Oh, yes, it was, exactly. We were very
serious.
Not about
drinking beer.
No, not at all.
Supporting a local business.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. And Adnams has actually turned up to be a really interesting mid-sized brewery. And it was, I think, the first UK brewery that went carbon neutral.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that had nothing to do with us. But, I mean, it was my interest in them is entirely coincidental. But of course, I was delighted. Well, so I was delighted when they made such progress
on their
footprint.
Absolutely. When we taste them, they will get this flavor score, plus they'll clearly
get their premium. They definitely should get the 1 point kicker. Yeah, they're very good from that point of view. And they've got a range of beers. There's one particular one called Adnams Broadside, which is in celebration of a battle with the Dutch Navy, the Royal Navy, the British Navy, and the Dutch Navy in 16 something or other, just off the coast. And so it's called Adnams.
Just off that coast.
Oh, and it's a very rich amber, kind of almost got coffee flavors. You know, it's a kind of deep color and deep flavors to it. It's very lovely.
That sounds great. Well, I look forward to somehow sourcing some Adnams here.
Yeah, yeah.
But thank you for educating us on
the Adnams Appreciation Society.
It just expanded.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's
maybe your first two American.
Absolutely.
So, you got to declare some fruit in customs next time.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we'll have to get some across.
So, Charlie, let's talk about the brewery itself, the Bronx Brewery, and some of the things they're doing on the sustainability side before we give our ratings here.
Yeah, so it's a craft brewery from the Bronx. And as I mentioned at the top, their mission is community creativity and inclusivity, celebrating the rich and diverse creative scene in their home borough, which I think is really cool. They brew a series called the Y Series, where they partner with a Bronx community group to raise up that group and its mission. Side note, my identical twin brother runs an amazing cultural institution in the Bronx called Dream Yard, which does arts and education after school and programming throughout the Bronx school system. So I'm going to connect him to the Bronx Brewery because I think that's a potentially great partnership. So I couldn't find anything on sustainability. Per se, but I think it's captured in this, and certainly a sustainable and vibrant community is its own angle. Lots to celebrate, and in researching their Y Series beers, I came across the following. Before we get to the score, Respira, it's a Goza.
Goza.
We had our first Goza in season two.
It's a beer. It's a style of beer. It's not Goze, Goze.
We tried every pronunciation.
Yeah, okay. Like come with Goza.
It's something like a. It's a sour. It's a light sour beer.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah.
So this one, the Bronx Brewery partnered with the WRU Crew, which is We Run Uptown. So near and dear to my heart, it's a running community from Uptown, Bronx, and Dominican. So it's Dominican Bronx-based running crew, which is amazing. And specifically, they wanted to create a beer that would appeal to fellow runners. And WRU Crews, and you can't make this stuff up, their approach to creating Respira, this beer, was to make it, Mike, a crushable, flavorful beer.
I know. I gotta try it. I gotta see where it ranks.
So it's the first beer that actually is self-selects into the crushability. It's
well aligned with my own personal ranking system.
It's so great. Yeah. And look, I mean, so is it ignorant Brit? Crushable means it's a session beer, is it? You drink quite a lot of it, or is it just
it's so good
the more you have, you keep going?
Yeah, well, I think
this is the debate. I was confused on this point for many weeks.
Yeah, so to me, and that's all that really matters in a personal ranking, is just how many I want to drink of it. So
it's high compliment.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether he's physically capable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean,
and the crushable term comes because you crush the can and you go on to the next one. Is that what it is?
It's just a term of endearment. So
to have a crush on something, to have a crush on a beer is because it's crushable. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So what do we think of the beer?
I think it's a really good example of American IPA. It's very popular now, American IPA in the UK, and it took off partly on the East Coast.
Oh yes,
here, didn't it? And some in California.
Yes,
but
and there's now definitively an East Coast and West Coast style IPAs.
Yeah. And there's a touch of kind of almost citrus on the back of them. I know it's very another term, quaffable.
Crushable. I love it. It's quaffable. I like it. I think it's flavorful. It's got a nice balance. It's got some hoppy. It's got a little bit of bite, but it doesn't overdo it. I actually think this is one of the better beers we've tasted. It's a 10-point scoring system, Martin, while we go around.
But I haven't tasted the others, have I?
No.
This is the wild card. Mike and I are the constants. All of our guest judges will put out a number and we'll assume that it all evens out.
Okay.
Right. And you'll see that Mike and I have very different scoring styles.
Interesting. Yeah. Different palates.
I tend to be much more, what would you call it, lenient on
or score. Appreciative.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. You start. Yeah.
I'm actually going to give this an 8.5. With a full 1 point for sustainability, just because I love the community mission. So I'm giving it a 9.5, which is a pretty high score.
That's pretty high score.
It's a beautiful score, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to rank very, very up there. We'll have to come back for the crushable one to see how we're doing. So American Pale Ale, it's not, and I would call an East Coast IPA. It's definitely not too heavy. But I would say crushability, East Coast IPAs are like a 1 or 2, sometimes a half. They're just disgusting sometimes. This is like a 3 or 4.
So reasonably good on the crushability.
Yeah, reasonably
good. And what's your what's your score on our traditional scale?
That's a 7.3.
See, he's a lot harder than that. And what about sustainability?
Well, I think he's so mean, he should give us his beer, frankly, because it feels like it's wasted on it.
I mean, to be fair, it's gone. I mean, I didn't drink it all.
quite.
I'm not going to waste the beer. I have high standards.
So is that 7.3 with the kicker?
No, 7.3 plus the one, that's 8.3. An 8.3. Yeah.
Well, I think these high standards are a pretense. I saw him drink it.
Yeah, exactly. And how about you, Mark?
So I definitely give it a 7, maybe an 8. Yeah. I think this is a good session beer. It's really good. I can see it on a warm afternoon and you've been doing something, whatever it is, and you sit down and you pour this out and just does it get to where you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nothing better. Yeah. Well, that's great. So you'd give it an 8?
Yeah. But if you're through in the community work they're doing, take it from a 7 to an 8.
To an 8. Beautiful. Yeah. All right. So a 9.5, an 8, and an 8.3.
Yeah, that's a good score. It's good beer. Very well.
Yeah,
Brought.
I like it.
Well, what a pleasure. And one last question, Martin, because we're creating the hypothetical Renew beer party.
Okay.
If you had one person you would like to have a beer with, dead or alive, who would it be?
God, such a hard question, isn't it? Right. It's a really hard question. Yeah. There's an alive hero I have, David Attenborough.
Oh,
great.
Okay, perhaps. So I'm not going to actually go with him. There's somebody else we don't even know if he existed. So I've got a fascination with Odysseus, as in the Odyssey, the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Yeah.
And I've just come back from a sailing trip around the Ionian, where we were in part doing some research into where Ithaca, his home, was, and, where was he supposed to meet these Cyclops and these kind of stuff.
Okay.
Because my grandfather was classically trained, and when we were little kids, we used to sit in the end of his bed with a mug of tea, listening wide-eyed, to him telling us these stories. And so I've always been fascinated about, is it just mythology or is it based on some truth? Right. And it's clearly based on some historical things.
Yeah.
So I'd love to meet the real Odysseus. Wow. I suspect he's an absolute pirate and kind of closer to our understandings of Vikings and probably incredibly unpleasant. Wonder, but if we gave him good beer, I think I'd be okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You'd be fun to have a beer with.
Yeah, exactly.
My God, you just took our beer career to a whole different level. I never thought of mythological figures.
But he's older.
This is great. Much older.
Much older, yes.
Yeah, he definitely ranks as the oldest living member of, well, not living.
Well,
oldest,
we don't know whether he lives or not. We think he probably lived, in some sort. Yeah.
No, this is a great, this is a great.
I will say I have toddlers and I've bought a book of Greek mythology at a children's story. It's a thick book and it starts with the whole mythology. And I've tried reading it to there. They're not ready yet, but I am looking forward to reading that with them.
That's a great idea. All right, well, Odysseus joins the beer circle. Yeah. I love it.
He must have slaughtered the other guests.
We take his weapons.
He leaves his weapons at the door. And we give him plenty of beer, and he'll probably be fine.
Exactly.
it's a party, not a battle royale. So it'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be okay. Good.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks, Martin. Really a
thank
pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for all the work we do together. It's really important. It's great. So thank you.
Green Beers is brought to you by Renew Energy Partners, your partner in building decarbonization. Decarbonizing your building is good for the earth and it's a smart business move, but it's complicated and it can cost you a lot of money. Our goal is to decarbonize your building while saving you money, so all of those retrofits pay for themselves. Learn more at renewep.com.